The next meeting of the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission will be held in Hong Kong from May 4th to 10th, focusing on the critical questions of ethical decision-making within the two churches. Following informal talks here in Rome on Monday, the co-chairman of the dialogue group, the Catholic Archbishop of Birmingham in the UK, Bernard Longley, and the Anglican Archbishop of New Zealand, David Moxon, said they were optimistic about building on the extremely positive results of the previous meeting, held at the monastery of Bose in northern Italy last May. That 10-day meeting in Bose marked the start of a new phase of ARCHIC, the third since the official dialogue between Catholics and Anglicans began in the wake of the Second Vatican Council. Unbeknown to the vast majority of people in the pews, these scholarly discussions have produced substantial agreement on many subjects, from Eucharistic theology to ordination, ministry, and Marian devotion. Despite this progress and much practical cooperation between the churches at local level in many countries, public perception continues to portray the leaders of the two communities at loggerheads over issues of papal primacy, the ordination of women, or homosexuality and ministry. But that may be about to change, says Archbishop Moxon, since the Bose meeting provided a new key to help overcome some of these apparently insurmountable obstacles.
It was an unexpected outcome. A very positive breakthrough, I think, using the concept of receptive ecumenism, which we weren't expecting would have the effect it did at the beginning of the meeting. Professor Paul Murray of the University of Durham, a lay Roman Catholic theologian, presented his journal entry on receptive ecumenism, which is a new way of understanding interchurch relationships. And that transformed the meeting, I think, into a new sort of momentum and a new kind of hope, an unlocked door, which we thought had been closed.
I first heard that term receptive ecumenism a couple of years ago, and since then I've heard it bandied about as the answer to all our difficulties in this dialogue. But what exactly does it mean?
Essentially, it means that each church shares with the other what its worst difficulties are, its greatest challenges, its deepest angst, and invites the other church to reflect with it on how to overcome them. And out of that kind of shared solidarity around the massive obstacles and challenges we face respectively, a new sort of intimacy, a new sort of rapport develops, we believe, that will assist the longer-term dogmatic and doctrinal confluence we want. But the formal agenda of ARCHIC 3 from the beginning was the two great questions that we face. How does the global church get represented locally, and what's the relationship between local and global in terms of authority, cohesion, oversight? And secondly, how does the church universal make ethical decisions? So those two topics, which we knew beforehand, are still there, and we've got people working on each of those. But Bose developed a whole lot of tasks, all of which are still at the confidential stage, researching into the background of these three things: receptive ecumenism, a global local ecclesiology, and the making of ethical decisions.
The monastery of Bose, you say, was particularly conducive, wasn't it, to a very positive outcome of this meeting?
Yes, they've got an ecumenical charism. It's their vocation to be ecumenical. Brother Enzo Bianchi, the prior who founded the Bose community, the end of Vatican II, all his life has tried to host members of different communions and ecclesial communities. And they have huge seminars every year on ecumenical relationships. So when you pray with the monastic community at Bose, you're praying with a group that passionately believe in Autonum Sint, that we may all be one. And that papal encyclical on Autonum Sint from Pope John Paul II is their guiding light. And you could feel it when you were there. They were genuine, they were real, they live it. And that helped ARCHIC 3, which, let's face it, had been on hold for over a decade, rise up and walk.
You're dealing, of course, there in ARCHIC with two teams of very deeply committed theologians, of course, but also deeply committed ecumenists. And yet, you know, the public perception persists of these two communities at loggerheads with each other. What on earth can you do, perhaps, to try and help spread this ecumenical enthusiasm to a wider public?
Well, you've put to your finger on the pulse. That is exactly what needs to happen next. And there is a group called IARCUM, which is the Anglican vehicle for spreading the good news of what has been achieved so far through DVDs, through books, through publications. And they're about to get organised again. They did do some initial work collating common documents and agreements. They did publish. It has been distributed to the Anglican world. But to most Anglicans, it's a surprise. If you do a kind of helicopter view of what the ARCIC 1 and ARCIC 2 processes have achieved, you find that in principle and in essence, we agree on about, roughly speaking, 80% of doctrine. The remaining 20% are significantly problematic for us both, of course. But a great deal of scholarship, a great deal of hope and prayer is going into what next and how we can increase that percentage. But bear in mind as well that we have never disagreed over the notion of degrees of communion. Church as communion means that although we don't break bread together in that Eucharistic communion sense, we do have an increasing sense of degrees of communion. We have a communion which is valid and real and authentic through baptism. That makes us one in a sense. We have a communion which is valid and real in terms of essential agreements on the Eucharist, which is a surprise to many Anglicans. And they've been largely respected by both judiciaries. We have other documents on morals. We have documents on the Church's communion itself, on marriage, on priesthood, which all have had the respect of both churches. Not all of them have been officially adopted yet. But my sense is that what unites us is greater than what divides us. And that's the good news we need to share and act on.
I can recognise very clearly what Archbishop David is speaking about from our more than 10 days in Bose.
Catholic co-chairman Archbishop Bernard Longley shares that sense of optimism following the first round of ARCIC Phase 3. After 20 years spent in ecumenical work in the UK, he hopes this receptive ecumenism model may just provide the badly needed breakthrough at this international level.
There was a real excitement at Bose that we had begun something in a climate which has not been so propitious towards ecumenical working together. But this has the feel of something which is going to be very important for both our communions. And it is a manageable area, I think. Unlike the previous ARCIC Commission, ARCIC II, which worked together for almost 20 years on a very varied mandate, we've been given something which is manageable, specific, and significant, I think, to the lives of our churches, particularly over these coming 5 or 6 years.
You're talking about this term receptive ecumenism, but can you try and perhaps illustrate to us in practice what it really means?
Well, a little example, which in fact we've been looking at closely within my own context in the United Kingdom. In my own Archdiocese of Birmingham, there are 5 Anglican dioceses. And I've worked quite closely in one of them, the Bishop of Worcester, Bishop John Inge, and we've had a study day recently on the 400th anniversary of the King James Version of the Bible. For Roman Catholics, looking at the experience of the Church of England of not only using the vernacular, the scriptures in English, but also using the scriptures in English liturgically, just as we are beginning to use a new translation of the Missal, which is drawing out the scriptural riches of the liturgical prayer, so I think it's good for us to look at the tradition of the Church of England and see, here is a church which has been using the scriptures in English liturgically. What is it we can learn from that experience over 400 years? And of course, we have ourselves benefited more widely within English culture from the presence of the scriptures, knowledge of the scriptures, and scriptural phrases and themes which have embedded themselves within our own language. So that's one small but important example, I think, the presence, the use of scripture in English within and in the vernacular within another tradition from which we can learn.
You're looking ahead now, aren't you, to the next round of ARCIC in May in Hong Kong?
Yes, the Anglican Communion will be our host in Hong Kong, where we'll be staying in the Anglican Mission to Seamen, in fact, in that setting. It's significant, I think, because the setting itself is important. It's thinking of the way in which Christianity is developing and growing within the Chinese setting itself. But the agenda for ARCIC is going to be obviously continuing the work which we began in Bose. And I think in particular, probably looking at some more concrete examples of the church coming to a right moral teaching as communion, local and universal. And from both our traditions, I think we'll want to look at some concrete examples. And we're actually working on which are the areas of church life, what are the examples, what are the sticking points in terms of moral teaching and ethical teaching from which we can learn in this process. And we realise it's only really the beginning when we come together in Hong Kong looking at those concrete examples. I'm not sure how many of those we'll be sharing very publicly before we actually come to our work together, but that's going to be an important stage for us.
You speak very optimistically. You're quite upbeat about this phase of the talks. How do you share this optimism and enthusiasm around these talks with those in the Catholic Church, including perhaps here in the Vatican, who don't see it the way you do?
Well, I think the fact that we work very closely, obviously, our work is both sponsored and is resourced and supported by the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, a body which has just celebrated, just last year, 50 years of its own life and existence and work. And it does have a way of influencing also thinking within other dicasteries, obviously putting before the work of the other dicasteries always the ecumenical question of what is the dimension of this particular work that we can, where we can search for work together, where we can witness together with other Christians. For example, as you know, the Holy Fathers established just a year ago the new Pontifical Council for Promoting the New Evangelization. I feel very blessed, in fact, to have been appointed as a member of that council. And I think the ecumenical work that is an important feature of my own experience as a bishop locally, clearly that's something I'd want to bring into my own contribution within that council as we prepare for next year's synod on the new evangelization. I think there'll be a wonderful opportunity within that synod too for, you know, the synod often has ecumenical observers or those who are invited to be part of it. And I think insights, particularly we're here in Rome at the moment, preparing for ARCHIC for next year, but the insights from within the Anglican Communion on the new evangelization are going to be important next year too in the preparation for the synod. So that's, I think, how to translate, how to bring our experience locally of ecumenism into the work of the church universally. But also it is a challenge to bring back something of the enthusiasm that we feel when we gather together universally into our local setting. But I have to say, I mentioned the study day with Bishop John Inge of Worcester. Roman Catholics and Anglicans from right across the county of Worcester came together, 250, for 4 hours together on a Saturday morning in Worcester Cathedral. It was a great experience and showed me that ecumenism is really alive within the shires and counties in England, and the cities too.
You mentioned next year's Synod of Bishops on new evangelization. How else is the Church preparing for this very important meeting? What ideas do you have to bring specifically from the UK context?
Well, two things I can mention in particular. That I think we were delighted that one of our own cities in the UK has been chosen as one of the 11 metropolitan missions. So the city, the Diocese of Liverpool, and Archbishop Pat Kelly is himself very excited about working ecumenically, as well as developing this the challenge which is there to bring the new evangelization to a setting like the city of Liverpool and the parts of Lancashire which his diocese covers. So the Metropolitan Missions is one important dimension of the new Pontifical Council's work. I think the other thing is the way in which we look forward to the Year of Faith. And preparations are already in hand, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Second Vatican Council by beginning this Year of Faith. And I think that's going to engage us during the coming year.
Can you give us any practical examples of ways in which it's going to be celebrated?
The Year of Faith itself, well, I think that within dioceses there's an opportunity to focus on the new evangelization, and we're hoping that in the course of the year there will be opportunities for not only for dialogue but reaching out. For example, the Holy Father's idea of the courtyard of the Gentiles. There are many opportunities which we have locally, I think, in the UK to open up a dialogue with people who are interested in what is important, who have values which are not necessarily rooted in faith or in the scriptures, but where there is a commonality, a concern for people, for the well-being of people, and there is a dialogue which we really do need to encourage and open up. and looking at the concerns that there are within our cities, and particularly the economic crisis, which has had such an effect on families, I think there's a wide dialogue, for example, on our support of families and family life, which is of such a concern to Catholics and Christians, but where people of other faiths and indeed people who have no faith basis for their values are concerned about the state of the family and the importance of the family within society more widely. So hopefully we'll have opportunities for opening up our own courtyards of the Gentiles.
My thanks there to Archbishop Bernard Longley of Birmingham in England, the Catholic co-chairman of ARCIC, the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission Dialogue Group. And earlier you heard the Anglican co-chairman, Archbishop David Moxon from New Zealand.